This podcast is an unscripted, unedited conversation about true crime. We take the cases very seriously, but I don't take myself seriously at all, and neither should you. Welcome to Wife of Crime.
So, Russ, as a true crime creator, I am asked all the time if there's one particular case that got me interested in the true crime genre, and there is. There is one case that I have been waiting to tell you about. I've been holding on to this case for a very long time because it is the first time I realized that people around us can be the real monsters. This is the case of Dave Rothenberg, aka Dave Dave. Everyone, welcome back to Wife of Crime, a true crime podcast where I tell my husband Russ true crime stories and he reacts to them.
What's up, folks?
I sounded very broadcast voiced today.
Yeah, well, I guess you're getting professional.
I'm very professional. You're the most unprofessional professional podcaster.
Yeah, but I get the job done.
You do. And people like it.
Somehow I'm still here and there have been a few times where people probably have tried to replace me through messages like, hey, if you need some, you want to like do a No Russ podcast.
It's true. There have been people who said, maybe you should get a different co-host. And you know what I say every time? No.
Well, it's Russ, a.k.a. still cooler than Zac Efron.
Definitely. He looks like Lord Farquaad.
Farquaad. You see this boy? You know who he looks like to me? He looks like Lou Ferrigno before he gets angry.
When I saw the picture of him, that the meme that's going around, and someone said, like, this is the demon of our nightmares with him with that haircut and everything. When I saw that picture, I literally was like, gag.
Well, if you're kind of new here, Jess's favorite actor, no. Who she thinks she is the best actor of all time, is Zac Efron, and her crush.
He is my crush, but he's not my favorite actor.
Yeah, but now he has a new face. What do you like, new face or old face?
No, old face. I don't know what's up with him. He looks horrendous.
He looks like himself if he ordered himself off of Wish.
True.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I ordered Zac Efron off of Wish and I got this. Or like if someone did a porn and said it, oh, I have a porn of this person, but it's not really them.
Yeah. That was a good one. Now I'm Jess, aka Little Wheezy. That's been going strong for a while, that joke. So I'm happy about
AKA
it.
AKA get her the asthma pump.
So this month on True Crime and Chill, we decided to cover the untold, the girlfriend who didn't exist, which was about Manti Te'o and that whole drama that happened with him a few years ago where he got catfished. And it was pretty crazy. I have to say, we were both a little tipsy on the coverage of that one. And I think it turned out really good. I'm excited to post it on the Patreon. We're going to be posting it this week on Patreon.
Yeah, it was weird because I sat down at the table and I realized I had every kind of booze you could have in front of you. It was so weird. I had an opened beer, a half a glass of wine, and a bottle of bourbon. That's how you know like things are going to get weird.
Things are going to get weird. It did get a little weird, but it was funny. So I'm excited to post that. Look out for that on Patreon this week. And do you have anything else to bring up before we do our patron shout outs?
I saw on the internet somewhere, which was pretty crazy, and I didn't plan on bringing this up, but someone got their dog that passed away. And they made it into a rug. Like, you know how like people do it with the bear?
Oh my God. I don't know how I feel about that.
You know, you probably love your dog a lot, but you shouldn't do that. Or you should if it makes you...
If it makes you happy, I guess. It makes you feel good.
Yeah, that was awkward.
That would be really awkward.
Very like Ed Gein vibes.
Yes.
Like if you don't know how to mourn.
Oh. That would be awkward, having a biggie rug.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine that. I've heard of people like taxidermying their pets, but a rug that you step on or put furniture on? Very odd.
At least they didn't turn them into a curtain.
Really weird.
Or a belt, like Ed Gein's nipple belts.
Yeah, his stuff was out of control.
Yeah, meat curtains.
Meat curtains, don't say that. Oh, God. That took it to another level. So one thing I did want to talk about was, I love how women always ask this question. Like, women do this all the time. We always say, would you still love me if...
I had one arm. Why are they always losing body parts in love?
Well, Heidi Klum is the queen of Halloween, and she was a worm this year for Halloween, which was like an epic costume. If you guys haven't seen Heidi Klum's costumes, first of all her costumes are amazing. She's always the queen of Halloween. But this year was absolutely terrifying because she was a worm. But it all stemmed from the fact that she asked her husband, would you love me if I was a worm? And he said yes, so she made herself a worm for Halloween, and she was terrifying.
That's a weird question to ask. Women are so weird.
Yeah, we are weird. I ask you that question a lot, but yeah, I don't
watch
know.
Anything that the person's, any scenario that a person's going through in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Would you love me? And I was like, no.
But you're lying.
Nope.
You're lying. Don't front on this podcast. If you're so full of crap.
If you were a worm, I'd use you to catch fish.
All right. Well, we have a bunch of new patrons, so it's time for you to do our patron shout outs.
All right, folks. Join Patreon. We have a ton of extra episodes over there of True Crime and Chill, where we review documentaries.
Yes, we do one a month.
That are like about true crime. They got to be like 30, 40 of them joints over there now.
Yeah, something like that.
So do that, and you get like free stuff over there too, and some more stuff. And I'll give you a shout out. So this week's patrons are Amanda, Addy, Harpa, Zyra, Sandra, Charnay, Jennifer, Coral, Chi, Diana, Brooke, Grace, Josh, Matthew, Hannah, Laura, Mouse, and Ashley.
Yeah.
So, cheers to you guys.
I'm cheersing too. Hold on. I can't get it open.
I guess there goes a fail.
Well, open mine for me.
Would you love me if I couldn't open a beer?
Open it up.
She don't even have her nails done. I don't
cheers.
Know why she can't do this.
Thank you.
So, also every week, I say the same thing every week, which I got to get a new shtick.
You definitely have to get a new shtick. Maybe you'll have to think of one over the next 2 weeks.
How do you say
episode.
Review of the week without review of the week?
I guess you got to say it.
So every week I do a review of the week. You leave a review on the Apple thingy and I will read it. And this one is from Morgan TM. Simply the best 5 stars. I truly believe this show will be something huge someday when it lands in the right ears. And I'll definitely fangirl because I loved it from the beginning. Keep killing it, Morgan.
Aww.
So thanks, Morgan. I think I know Morgan from social media.
It might be the same Morgan.
That's
I'm not
true.
Sure.
There could be a lot of Morgans.
There's probably a few Morgans that listen.
But if any of you guys are listening, I already think it fell on the right ears. So whoever didn't listen, screw them.
Just keep sharing, and maybe one day it will fall on some famous ears.
I never really sat at this table and got drunk thinking this is going to be like a thing.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, it started as a hobby, and now it just keeps on growing.
No, keep rocking, homies.
All right. So this case that I'm telling you today is actually incredibly near and dear to my heart. And I've been really excited all week because you have absolutely no idea, as usual. But sometimes I kind of hint at what I'm going to tell you. But this week, I made it a point to not say a word.
Well, you can never keep a secret. It's like when you have a present for me, you'd be like, I have a present for you. Do you want to know? And I'm like, no. She's like, but you do, don't you?
Well, I've been super excited because I've been keeping this secret all week. So this case is really near and dear to my heart. And it's honestly the case that has impacted me the most of all of them. I've been saving it in my back pocket for a very long time.
And women don't put anything in their pockets. They ask men to hold everything.
I originally wanted to do it for our 100th episode. That was the plan all along. If we got to 100 episodes, I was going to do this case.
Are we there?
We're close. So we're a bi-weekly schedule. So we're on episode 96. Okay. We're very close, but last week I did a Patreon poll because occasionally I do polls on the Patreon and have them pick the next few episodes because they're the crime family and they, you know, are part of this whole thing. So I did this poll on Patreon and they overwhelmingly picked Not Me, Not Today.
Those are my main stories. Like, I wish we only did those, but I guess you would probably run out.
I don't know if you'd run out, but we got to do a variety. We need variety. But yes, they are our favorites by far. So I decided to do the one that I've been saving for the 100th episode now because it's a Not Me, Not Today. Because we're only four episodes away from 100.
Is that counting the two deleted episodes?
No, it was actually three deleted episodes. So this would technically be episode 99.
Oh, God. Wait, you said we're at what?
96.
6, 7, 8, 9. So you deleted 3. This would be 100.
Oh, it would be 100. Oh, so look at that. Yeah. The universe, it all worked itself out.
This is definitely a simulation.
Definitely a simulation. So we haven't done a Survivor episode in a little bit. The last one was Ellen Halbert, the ninja in the attic case. Do you remember that one? That one was crazy.
No.
He was dressed as a ninja hiding in her bathroom. Oh, yeah. That was insane.
Didn't she beat him up?
No. He beat her up really bad, but she changed laws. She survived. It was a crazy episode. And all of our Survivor episodes are equally insane and inspiring, and that's why we love them so much. As a true crime creator, I am often asked the question, what case got you into true crime? Right. I get that question all the time. Over the last 3 years of making this podcast, I have mulled over that question because although Serial Podcast was what got me into true crime podcasts, my interest in true crime, human behavior, forensic psych, it started much, much earlier. As millennials, we grew up with shows like America's Most Wanted.
I'm a millennial?
Yes, you're a millennial. I looked it up. We grew up with shows like America's Most Wanted, Unsolved Mysteries, Rescue 911, and my personal favorite, Law & Order SVU. You like America's Most Wanted, right? That was your...
Yeah, I used to like him. That was the dude that got his child kidnapped, and then he started that show.
Yeah.
I don't know if he started the show right after, but he got into it like that.
Yeah. But after taking some time to really analyze where my interest started, I always think about the first time I realized that people can be real monsters. As a little kid, we're afraid of fictitious monsters, right? We're afraid of the dark. We're afraid of monsters in our closet or under our bed. But there was a moment in time that I realized the real monsters can be someone I know or even trust and love. The very first time I was impacted by a case was when I was a tiny little human. I don't remember how old I was exactly, but I know I was little and I have flashes of watching a horrible crime play out on TV and talking to my mom about it. Mm. In 1988, ABC released a made-for-TV movie called David. The cast was very 80s, okay?
Poofy hair.
Well, the whole show was very 80s, yes, poofy hair, but Matthew Lawrence played the star David Rothenberg. Do you know Matthew Lawrence? Boy Meets World, Mrs. Doubtfire, his brother was Joey Lawrence.
Is he the main dude from Boy Meets World?
No, he's the friend.
No clue.
Okay. So this is the story of a 7-year-old boy from Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn.
Who survived a horrific attempted murder. Fought for his life through multiple surgeries and complications, and eventually went on to live and thrive. But it's also about his mother that fought right alongside him and his father who never said, I'm sorry. Are you ready?
Yeah. So that means his father did it? Damn.
You're about to hear about it. David Rothenberg was born June 18th, 1976, in Carroll Gardens, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn.
I know what that is. I drive around New York City all day.
His parents, Marie and Charles, they tried to make their marriage work, but Charles was pretty irresponsible with money, and he had a record. He was a bit of a criminal in and out of jail, and he just wasn't good at taking care of his wife and son. So a couple years after they were married, Marie decided she'd had enough. She has a kid now. She can't have him around this bullshit, so she filed for divorce. So Marie wanted her son to still have a relationship with his dad, though. Like, she didn't get between the two of them. She didn't keep Charles from seeing David. But the relationship between Charles and Marie was tense and tumultuous. Marie was now this single mom raising her kid alone with little to no help, just like a lot of stories out there. David would see his dad on the weekend, sometimes after school when he wasn't in and out of jail. And he was kind of in and out. But when David would see his dad, he was like the fun parent.
Yep.
And I identified with this so much. My parents also got divorced when I was very young, and I lived with my mom. And my father at the time was the fun parent. Like, as a child, you don't understand the nuances of things like this. And I saw my mom and my stepdad as way less fun. They were like my authoritarian figures.
Well, they had to, like, make sure you do your homework and stuff because you lived with them.
Exactly.
Well, it'd be like, it's like us in the house with Biggie and stuff. Like, obviously, I'm the fun guy and you're the disciplinarian.
Well, I identified with this because my father was the fun parent. And I looked at my parents, my mom and my stepdad, as my authoritarian figures. And the weekends with my father was like a cool little vacation because the world revolved around me. For 2 whole days. He did whatever I wanted. So my father at the time was irresponsible. And this dynamic, it happens a lot in life, right? There's a divorce. One parent is more irresponsible than the other one. The other one has to pick up the slack. This happens all the time. So a few years after their divorce, Marie meets a guy named John. John's in the NYPD. He has a good job. He has a pension. He's protective of Marie and David, and he's stable. So Marie and John fall in love, and they decide that they want to get married. They get engaged. Now it's March of 1983, and Charles, David's real father, finds out that Marie and John are getting more and more serious, and he feels really threatened by this. He's afraid that David won't see him as his father anymore. He's afraid that they, you know, will have their little family and then he'll just be forgotten about. So he gets kind of jealous.
That's a legitimate worry. Not that you'll be completely forgotten about, but you might be put on the back burner a little, you'll feel.
Yeah. No, I think it's a legitimate worry. Absolutely. But it's how you handle it. So John had New York Rangers playoff tickets for the next weekend, and he was planning to take David to the game. At this point, David is 6 years old. But Charles steps in and says, no, this is my weekend. I want to take David on a trip. He takes Marie out to dinner, and at this dinner, he talks about how he's working to better his life. He's getting a better job. He wants to get on the same page, stop fighting, and try to co-parent, you know, a little bit better.
Very mature.
He tells her, look, I was going to take him to the Catskills for the weekend, but now, since I'm starting this new job and I'm going to be a lot more busy, how about you let him stay with me for a week? I have a week before my new job starts, and him and I can spend a lot of time together. I only live a few blocks away. He can stay with me for the week. I'll make sure he goes to school. And Marie...
Doesn't seem like nothing's wrong with that.
She was conflicted about it because she doesn't trust Charles. He has a criminal past. He's irresponsible. He doesn't contribute. Although David
had criminalizing, that's not a word, but he's not doing stuff towards his child. Like, if you're just self-harming yourself, like just making stupid decisions, you could still be a good parent, but you just like sabotage your own life.
That is true. Well, she did feel conflicted about it. And she went back and forth in her head, but even though she was nervous, she thought, you know what? Maybe he is changing. Like, maybe he is finally realizing what he needs to do. So she says, okay. John is her fiance, the NYPD dude. He also convinces her and he tells her, look, I don't want to get between Charles and his son. Like, I'm going to be his stepdad, but I don't want to get between their relationship. I don't want David to be angry at me and resentful. So what I'm going to do is give my tickets to my partner, and my partner could take his kid to the game.
That's pretty big.
And let them have this week together.
Or he could have gave the tickets to the dad and the son. Like, you know what? You guys go enjoy the game. And then he would have been the super cool guy.
That's cool. Yeah. That would have been really cool.
But like, hey, I ain't friends with him. I give it to my real friend.
Yeah. I mean, there was tension there. So I get it. So David was so excited. He gets to spend a whole week with his dad, his favorite guy. He was so excited. He couldn't wait. David and Charles get in the car and Marie watches them drive off. John and Marie go out to dinner, and all night she just has this like funny feeling that she can't shake. She doesn't understand where it's coming from, but she just feels like something is off.
I don't know. Women always worry.
And John told her, what are you worried about? He spends time with his father all the time. Like, everything's okay.
Yeah, overnight too, right?
Yeah, overnight. Charles and David are at his apartment, and he tells him that he has a huge surprise. Charles says that early tomorrow morning, we're going to go to California. We're going to Disneyland.
Mm.
David is like so excited. He's like, oh my God, Disneyland? I don't have to go to school? He's only six, so this is huge, right?
Best day of your life.
He almost can't like contain himself. He wants to call his mommy and tell her all about it. But Charles says, no, this is a secret. You can't tell your mom or she won't let us go. And you don't want her to stop us from going, right?
Mom's a fun police.
Meanwhile, Marie still feels like something's off. So around 9 p.m., she calls Charles, but the phone just rings and rings and rings, and he never answers. John tells her, don't worry about it. Just go to bed. Everything's fine. You know, we'll try again tomorrow morning. Early in the morning of March 1st, 1983, Charles and David get on a flight and head out to California. Over the weekend, David kept asking, when are we going to Disneyland?
Right.
Over and over. But Charles kept making excuses. They stayed in a motel in Bueno Park, California. And then on the morning of March 3rd, Marie finally gets a call from Charles. So now it's been 3 days since she's been able to get in touch with Charles or her son. And he calls her from a payphone. She's frantic. She's like, why haven't you answered my calls? Where are you guys? Can I please talk to David? When are you bringing him home? He doesn't give her any answers. He just says he's tired of this, tired of her, tired of this whole situation. And then he hangs up the phone. Marie immediately calls her fiance, John, and tells him Charles kidnapped David. And she thinks he took him out of New York.
Yeah, and back then they didn't have caller ID, so you couldn't even see the area code when someone's calling you.
Yeah, so he called from a payphone. But she just had a feeling like he's not in New York anymore.
So the kids that are listening, payphones are a thing that used to be on the corner of every street, and you had to put a quarter in there to make a phone call. We didn't have these devices with unlimited porn in them.
Oh, God. So since he's a cop, they work fast to get a search warrant for his apartment. And they see that he's not there, and he hasn't been there for a couple days. All of David's things are gone.
Wait, so they went in the father's house?
Yeah, they went into his apartment. They got a search warrant. Because now he kidnapped him.
Yeah, but it's not over the week yet, and she agreed to the week, so is that kidnapping?
It's kidnapping when you take the primary custodial parent's child out of the state without their consent.
Oh.
Because she had... you know, it's not like he had partial custody, but she's the primary parent. They didn't have joint custody.
So she's the boss.
Yeah, she's the boss for sure. So later that day, Marie receives a telegram. Okay, listen to this.
A singing telegram?
No. It says, Marie, I have terminated my existence. You have caused me enough harm. I've been through enough in my life. Also be informed that your son has been in an accident and was taken to the UC Irvine Health Regional Burn Center. But this was no accident. Charles gave his six-year-old son, a first grader, think about how little that is, a sleeping pill, and in the middle of the night, doused the entire bed with gasoline. He stood at the doorway of the motel room, lit a match, threw it in the room, and closed the door. He hopped in a car and drove away. This was supposed to be a murder-suicide to punish Marie.
Oh my God.
But Charles chickened out and didn't kill himself.
Someone needs to kill him.
When first responders showed up and put out the fire, they were told by a witness that they could hear sounds of screaming coming from the room. So they immediately ran in and discovered David and realized, although he had third-degree burns over 90% of his body, he was in fact still breathing.
Oh my goodness.
Meanwhile, in New York, Marie, after getting the telegram, immediately calls UC Irvine to see if her son is there. At this point, though, he's unidentified because...
You can't even see his face,
probably. Yeah, like he's completely burned 90% of his body. He's unrecognizable.
He probably can't even talk.
Yeah, he's heavily sedated. But he could hear. He had a breathing tube down his throat, so he couldn't talk. But he could hear, and he could shake his head yes and no. So one of the nurses asked, "Is your name David?" And he shook his head, yes. Marie and John get on the first flight out to California. And when she arrives at the hospital, police inform her that according to witness statements, Charles did this. Because she didn't realize Charles did it. She thought there was an accident. And then she got this telegram and Charles was going to kill himself. She didn't realize that his own father did this to him.
You know, what's crazy is when she got to the hospital, if someone didn't tell her that was her son, she probably couldn't even recognize him.
So in the movie, you know, the movie is actually based on a book written by Marie. Marie wrote this book and then ABC turned it into a movie. And I rewatched the whole movie today. And first of all, Mom, why did you let me watch that movie when I was a kid? It is disturbing. It is so disturbing and sad. When I was rewatching it today, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I watched this as a child.
We should make a list of movies that parents let us watch as a child, but they shouldn't have.
Yeah, I have a couple. We could start
with Bambi.
Yeah, there's a few.
They killed his mom. Dumbo was sad as shit.
Yeah, there's a lot. All
Disney movies.
Old Yeller.
Old Yeller. Why you let me watch Old Yeller, Mom?
Yeah. In the made-for-TV movie, Marie...
Let him watch Homeward Bound. At least Shadow comes over the hill.
Yeah, true.
And then you cry tears of joy. My eyes still water when I see that. It's the only movie that can make, like, you know, my eyes...
Water a little.
But there won't be a teardrop because I'm a gangster.
So in this made-for-TV movie... You see his mom come in the room and she's like, no, 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 that's not him. Because, you know, when burn patients come in, I'm going to go into a little bit about burn patients in a little bit. But when burn patients come in, they have to be fully covered with dressings. And he was fully covered with dressings head to toe. And she at first was like, no, there's no way that's my son. There's no way.
Yeah, she's like, that couldn't have happened to him.
And the movie, I looked it up. The movie is like almost exactly like the book. They kept it very factual. So when you watch the movie, all the way up until the end, like the last few minutes were a little different than the book. But everything in the movie was pretty factual. So I think at first she probably was a little bit in denial when she showed up. So now authorities are searching for Charles. They finally find him and arrest him for attempted murder. But while questioning him, this motherfucker never admits that he did anything wrong and he plays the victim the entire time. It's infuriating. Meanwhile, at the hospital, doctors inform Marie of her son's fragile condition. So burn patients are incredibly vulnerable and fragile. I work at a burn center and we get burn patients transferred to us all the time. Our burn ICU is like one of the best in New York. So shout out to all the burn nurses. In this movie, they made the nurses look like such bitches. But in real life, I spent a full day on the burn ICU when I first became a nurse. And I saw what these nurses actually do. And honestly, it's nothing short of amazing.
I couldn't even look at, not that I couldn't look at someone like that, but like I couldn't touch them. I'd feel like, oh my God, I couldn't even.
Yeah.
Like, you know, who, like, what do you wrap the wounds? I don't know.
I'm going to talk about it now, but burn patients are really fragile. And that's what makes these nurses so incredible.
I remember you telling me that. And I always thought, like, I just thought, like, their skin was burned, but the insides might not be. So they'll be all right. Like, it's going to be extremely painful, obviously, but, like, they're definitely going to make it. And you told me, no, like, the burns are can cause death. Like, I know they could, but I don't know how to explain it well. But I thought, like, if your insides were right, your organs weren't messed up.
Well, skin is our biggest organ.
Yeah,
skin is actually an organ. And burn patients are incredibly fragile and unstable because they're literally like a giant open wound. Third-degree burns are the worst type of burns. And in David's case, he was burned 90% of his body.
Basically, like,
his entire body.
He had a smidgen of his body that wasn't burnt.
So his...
Poor kid.
His entire body was an open wound. An infection can happen very fast and very easily. So because of this, like I said, he is wrapped head to toe in multiple dressings. And on the burn unit, they have to change these dressings, I think, once a day. I'm not positive. It could be more often than that. And dressing changes, like you said, are incredibly painful for the patient. So you need to be really careful and really meticulous.
Is it like a band? So say my arm is burnt, right? The whole thing. Is it just wrapped over it? Like use a bandage, like a cast or something, and they cover the whole body?
Well, first, they have to use... It's a particular type of dressing that's like wet and dry, and it's small sheets that they put on, and then they wrap over it. So it's like small sections.
So they put like some...
And then they wrap over it.
I saw something one time on internet. Everything I see is on the internet, obviously, because where else will we see stuff? That they were using fish scales on burn patients, and it was like helping their skin recover or regenerate or whatever the word would be.
Yes, they do. They use fish scales. So these dressing changes have to be very meticulous, and they're also completely sterile, okay? So you have to be mindful as a nurse the entire time that you're completely sterile. And if you break sterility, if you mess up and break that sterility, you can cause the patient to get an infection.
So you can't skip one hand washing when you go to the bathroom.
No, you can't break sterility in the room, I mean. You have to have sterile gloves on. You have to have a bonnet over your hair. You have to have a mask on. You're fully garbed head to toe in a gown, gowned up. It's almost like you're in an operating room. And if you mess up and touch something that's not sterile with your sterile gloves, and you touch that patient, you can introduce an infection that could kill them. So these dressing changes take hours. I was in one. I'll tell you a little bit of a story. I can't go into too much detail about the actual patient.
Wait,
but
and then the person, while you're doing it, is probably like, ah, like they're probably like in such pain that it makes it harder for you to do it because they're not just laying there.
Exactly. So I was in one for 2.5 hours. Okay, it took four nurses, me and three other nurses, 2.5 hours to do full dressing changes
on
this
patient.
Was it the whole body? I'm going to tell you. So this patient...
I'll shut up.
Please. So this patient had an attempted suicide, and he set himself on fire.
What a terrible way to go.
He didn't die. And on top of not dying, they had to amputate both arms and both legs.
Oh.
And he was third-degree burns over his entire body, both arms and both legs amputated. It took us 2.5 hours to do dressing changes on him. Four nurses. He was in so much pain. We had to keep stopping and medicating him, pain meds. And it was so hard for me because I was scared to death. I was sweating my ass off because I was scared to death of breaking sterility and possibly causing a problem. And I'm a new nurse at this point. I was brand new out of school. And so I just was scared to death. So I was sweating so much, and it was just...
That'll break sterility, you sweat.
Exactly. So you have to be so careful.
So
you
gotta
can't
probably
wipe your face. You can't do anything.
You probably got to move slow, because if you sweat, it's no good. So you got to...
No,
you need a fan.
It's like a balance. You have to move fast to get it over with, but move slow to not mess up. So it's a lot. And
that person after that probably didn't want to be alive no more.
They did not want to be alive. But
and as you're wrapping them, you're probably like, just let me go.
None of us are allowed to kill him. So this is the situation he finds himself in. So in David's case, David became septic multiple times. Sepsis is when an infection spreads to your bloodstream. And sepsis kills a lot of people in the world. He also suffered from brain swelling, which led to him having a bunch of seizures. In total, he received over 100 skin grafts.
From where? Where do they get the skin?
Cadavers. Dead people.
Okay.
Who are donors, organ donors.
I do know some stuff. I knew what a cadaver was.
Shout out to organ donors. He had to have his fingers amputated, as well as his ear, one of his ears fell off completely. And just remember, this is a 6-year-old child going through all of this, which is just like...
He's innocent.
Even more... Anyone going through this is horrible.
It's infuriating.
But a 6-year-old child...
This dude needs to be caught. And I'm a huge eye for an eye person. We're just going to burn him up, but not let him go.
Well, 3 weeks after John and Marie get to California, John ends up leaving to go back to New York. He says it's because he needs to get back to work, but Marie knows this is probably the end for them because John, he can't handle it. So John leaves, and now Marie and David are alone in California.
Were they together a long time before?
Yeah, a couple years.
Shit.
After a few more weeks, David finally wakes up, and they removed all of his tubes. So now he can talk and breathe on his own. He asks his mother where his daddy is. He also asked her.
That pisses me off.
He also asked her if daddy did this to him.
So he even had an idea.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Since he could hear, he heard what's going on in the rooms around them.
Yeah.
People talking and stuff.
And she had to say yes. Charles had his day in court while David was still in the hospital. And Marie came to make a statement in front of the court. She tells them how scared David is every single night that his father is going to come to the hospital and hurt him. And the nurses and doctors have to reassure David that he's safe. And she tells the judge that he needs to be put away as long as possible so David can have peace. But sadly, the maximum sentence for attempted murder in the state of California prior to this case was just 13 years.
What?
Charles served only 7 years. What? And was released on parole.
Let's kill him. Not me, because I would never do nothing like that, but someone should get him.
David underwent intense physical, occupational, and psychotherapy.
David should do it, and then they should let him go and say it like it was insanity because it made your mind go crazy.
David's still only a child, so he underwent intense physical, occupational, and psychotherapy.
That's fucking pissing me off, 7 years. That's like worse than murder. Like, you tortured someone.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
Your intentions were murder.
Mm-hmm. It's horrendous. After many, many months and lots of recovery and hard work and surgeries and ups and downs and instability and doctors telling Marie David's probably going to die, he gets released from the hospital because
he's
stable
enough.
Not me, not
today, motherfuckers.
Exactly. After being released, it was still a long road ahead of therapy, both physical and psychological, for David. Marie and the lead investigator on David's case, who ended up catching Charles, his name was Richard, they stayed in touch over the next couple years, and eventually they started dating. Marie wrote a book called David, and then it was turned into a made-for-TV movie on ABC. David and Marie moved to California to be with Richard, because David also loved Richard, because that was the cop that helped him by catching, you know, his father and putting him in jail. And David moved out to California while he was in middle school, and he even started skateboarding He learned to walk. He went to school. He became like a regular kid.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures of him now.
He loved skateboarding, hip hop. Like, he was a cool kid.
Yeah, he liked the Raiders. He wore the Raiders hats.
In 1992, Dave changed his name to David Robinson. He also became very close to Michael Jackson. Michael would visit him in the hospital and paid for most of his reconstructive surgeries.
Wow.
They remained friends for the rest of Michael's life. And they used to talk on the phone. They would visit each other. And they were just friends. After high school, he attended the Art Center College of Design in California, where he studied visual art. But he has no fingers, which is amazing to me.
He had like a nub. Not a nub. He had like a claw type. Like, his fingers were really short.
Yes,
looking at it.
They were.
Maybe he, you know, he probably found a way to wedge it in there.
He did, but it doesn't mean it's not challenging.
Oh, no, it's hard as fuck.
He eventually moved to Las Vegas, became a well-known conceptual artist, and changed his name again, legally, to Dave Dave. And he built...
You know, he probably didn't want his fucking father's last name.
Exactly. He built his brand and called his series that he created Lifted. As far as his father, in 2007, his father was sentenced to 25 years to life for multiple weapons and robbery charges. And Dave actually visited his father in prison and faced him. And he faced him to tell him how he impacted his life and to show him what he had done. It was the first time Dave saw his father since he was six. His father never apologized or took responsibility for it. And this was the reason David started going by the name Dave Dave. I'm going to play you an interview that he did with the show The Doctors. So he was in a clinical trial for pain management because even though he's recovered, he still lives in pain every single solitary day of his life. All burn patients do. So he was in this clinical trial for pain management, and he went on The Doctors to do an interview. And this interview is really good because he talks about his art, talks about why he changed his name, and it's just like a good little snippet about him. So I'm going to play it for you now.
Okay.
Yeah, this is such an inspirational story, and we're very blessed. David joins us today, and he insists he's not a victim. He's a survivor. David, please come join us.
Amazing.
Looking good.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
I was going to say, I'm hanging out here with two GQ studs.
Look at this. Pleasure. Look at this.
Pleasure.
Color coordinated, too.
You know, and first things first, Dave, you go by Dave Dave?
Yes, that's my legal name.
And you changed your name after this all happened. Why?
About 2 years ago, I changed it legally to Dave Dave to liberate myself from my father. And to establish myself as an artist, it was kind of like an artistic decision to do that.
And a lot of people will look at someone who's been burned and they think, okay, you know, physically, okay, I'm not seeing skin like I normally would on someone. But what a lot of people don't realize is what a toll it takes physically and the amount of pain. I wanted to talk with you briefly because one of the reasons we were excited to have you on the show is you're finally at a point in your life where pain no longer dictates it.
Almost. Currently, I'm undergoing a treatment called Calamari, which is a machine that they attach, and it has electrodes on it. What it does is it scatters the messages to the brain to shut off the pain centers in the brain in those areas, and it's absolutely amazing. It's changed my life for the better.
Talk a little bit, Dave, about the role of art as a therapy, especially for people who have been burned.
I think art is an expression that we all have. And whether or not I think we're all human beings and we all have different emotions and different feelings. However, we all have different challenges and different things to deal with. Currently, I'm showing at Joseph Watson Gallery and the Eden Fine Art Gallery in Las Vegas. And I'm just living the life of an artist and building a brand.
And is there anything before we go, Dave, that you want to leave people with?
I think my brand, it's Lifted, and it's I made it, I created it to inspire others to live their life at an elevated level. And I believe that through doing that, we become healthier people and better individuals.
So that was the interview with him. And I thought it was really good because it explains why he changed his name to Dave Dave, about getting away from his father's name, and then just talking about his artistic brand. And it's like just so inspirational. He really just pursued his love of art and tried to live his life to the fullest. And he has a ton of friends and tons of fans of his art. And the state of California actually changed the minimum sentence for attempted murder as a direct result of this case, which really speaks to the fact that when cases are highly publicized, like this one, it can expose the flaws in our system and it can force change.
Well, that's good, because a lot of times, you know, true crime gets a bad light.
It can, yeah.
So, but when it publicizes things like this, mm-hmm. and puts them in the forefront, I'm not saying that true crime did it, but in cases, you know, in the future and stuff that they give light to, mm-hmm. sometimes they can overturn wrongful convictions.
And, yeah.
You know, they can help find people, because web sleuths are no joke.
Yeah. Yeah, the true crime community really can make a huge difference and do a lot of good things.
But there's a line you cross. You
absolutely
know, there are people that glamorize it. And one thing I don't like is when people say, "What's your favorite serial killer?"
Yeah, yeah. The None. Whole like serial killer love is weird.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I don't love any of them.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know. I still forget that I'm a true crime podcaster anyway. I'm like, I don't know. I don't even listen to this stuff.
Yeah, you don't listen to it except on Wife of Crime, but
I think occasionally, though.
Yeah, I think it's important that these cases get told, and especially our Not Me, Not Today stories and survivor stories get told, because they're so inspiring and they just make you realize, like, you can literally make it through anything.
Hashtag never quit.
Never quit. Life is crazy and things happen and you can make it through anything if you put your mind to it. And he's like a prime example of somebody who fought so hard, even as a tiny little kid, as a six-year-old kid. He fought so hard to stay alive. The odds were stacked against him. Like, if you only knew about burn patients, how fragile they are, like, you don't even know the odds were stacked against him. It was like, the doctors were like, nah, he's got like a slim chance of making it. Seriously.
And he was thriving.
So although this is a survivor story, David did survive and live a life that he loved. But unfortunately, he did recently pass away at age 42. On July 15th, 2018 in Las Vegas. He became septic after complications from pneumonia. So he got pneumonia and then was hospitalized for it and became septic, which, like I said before, is when a infection spreads to your bloodstream.
Do you think that had anything to do with his burns?
I don't know. I don't think so. Possibly. I'm not a burn nurse, so I don't know all the ins and outs of burn patients. I know enough to stabilize them and get them to the burn ICU because I was an ER nurse. So okay. I don't know enough long term about the effects of burns on a patient. It could definitely have had something to do with it, but I'm not completely
Damn,
sure.
Dave, well, I'm glad you didn't let the tragedies hold you back from doing what you wanted to do.
Exactly. Like, it's a prime example of tragedies in life happen and setbacks happen and horrible, horrible things can happen to us. And you can still move past them and live an amazing life.
And it shows, if you got two hands, you could do anything. Go out there and do something.
Yeah.
Don't be a bum.
Yeah.
Hashtag don't be a bum.
Very true.
Anyone could do anything they want, because I always think like that too. If someone else could do it, why can't I?
Yeah. And he was very much like that. I watched a ton of other interviews with him, and he was like that. Like, I can do anything anybody else can do.
His brain worked good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. RIP to Dave Dave, and I am so glad his father, you know, is in jail, rotting.
I hope, you know, people are having sex with him that he doesn't want to have sex with, and he gets a roommate that's much bigger than him that he can't defend himself from, and he takes his fruit cups.
Mm. Okay.
And worse.
All right. Well, that was my case that got me into true crime, the one that has impacted me the absolute most. You can watch David, the made-for-TV movie, on YouTube. They have it on YouTube. It is separated into four parts, but you can watch it if you're interested. It's very 80s, a little bit of overacting, but it doesn't matter. It was based on her book, and her book, you know, like I said, it followed the book very closely, so it's very factual. And it's just such an inspiring story and really impactful. And I still can't believe I watched it as a little kid. All of us watched crazy shit when we were kids. Like Rescue 911. I was scared to death of escalators because in one episode of Rescue 911, I think I was like 9 years old, this kid's shoelace was untied and got stuck in the escalator, and it literally ate his legs, chopped his legs up. I was watching this as like a 9 year old. I was scared to death of escalators after that.
Do not look up those type of videos on the internet.
The escalator videos?
And I remember when I was a kid, I would fuck around on the escalator, not lift my foot and do all kind of weird shit. I never thought that that can happen.
Yes.
Because I'm the guy that, nothing's going to happen to me.
You are that guy. You are. And I was scared to death after that. And Unsolved Mysteries. All those shows. I watched all of them when I was little.
Just don't let them watch Bambi. If you let your kid watch Old Yeller, you shouldn't be allowed to have more children.
Yeah, Old Yeller is a rough one.
What else? My mom let me watch Orca.
Oh, God. I had never heard of Orca. I had never heard of Orca until I met you, and you told me about it.
I can't watch that.
And I was like, I never heard of it. And then we watched it together. You and I watched it years ago when we first started dating because you told me about it.
I don't even
and you
want to
were
talk
like,
about
it's
it.
The most, it's literally the worst movie of all time. And we watched it and it was disturbing.
Yeah. And you want the killer whale to kill everyone. And killer whales are smart as hell. They need to fuck SeaWorld.
Yeah. SeaWorld is a terrible place.
Don't go
place.
To SeaWorld.
Don't go to SeaWorld. It's a terrible place.
If you stop going, they'll have to close and they won't get any more animals.
Yeah. All right, well,
I'll go to any aquarium.
Now that we've told everyone how to parent, the two people who aren't parents have told everyone how to parent.
You know what? Let them little sticky kids watch whatever the hell they want. I don't give a shit.
All right, everyone. Well, follow us on Instagram at Wife of Crime.
Wait,
Pod.
I'm telling them how to what to do because I was a kid once and it was bad for me.
Well, yeah, I know. But
maybe my mom was like, watch this, you little shit.
Oh, God. All right, everyone. Well, follow us on Instagram at Wife of Crime Pod and Facebook at Wife of Crime, the Crime Family.
Wait, slow down, but also get merch at wifeofcrime.com. That's what I got.
Okay. And you can check us out on Patreon at Wife of Crime Pod and TikTok at Wife of Crime Pod. And have a wonderful week. We will talk to you guys soon.
Peace.